Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. And so the topic of consciousness came up, and because not a lot of topics have come up, that's what we're going to go with. But it's also something that we've been talking about, we've been talking around. So at the last tea time, we were talking about sloth and torpor and kind of waking up to the underlying patterns that are happening, kind of like below our awareness. But also, we've been talking about not self. And consciousness is one of these funny ways where sometimes we're on board with not self until we reach consciousness, and then we're like, okay, now I'm totally lost. And what, how could consciousness be not self? It's like this is all I got, right? And consciousness is it's a fascinating and weird kind of subject in the Buddhist teaching, because we are, when we do meditation, often we're looking at reality, and we're trying to figure out how it all works together, and our mind starts to open. And so we can appreciate, it's sort of like, wow, my consciousness is expanding. It's great. My mind is growing brighter. I'm becoming more aware and mindful of my surroundings. And that's consciousness, right? And so consciousness, sometimes it's a very low thing, and the Buddha talks about it, and it's like, this is our basic moment-to-moment cognition. This is a sight, this is a sound, this is a smell. And sometimes he's talking about it as this rather impersonal element. We call it the vijnana dhatu, the consciousness element. And sometimes it's independent origination. And it seems like consciousness is the thing that has to happen before anything else happens. It's the first thing that arises, and then you get perception and feeling and craving, attachment, identification, suffering, birth, aging, sickness, death, dukkha. Yeah. And it's all of these things. Part of our difficulty is that there's already many uses of the word consciousness in the English language. And it's kind of been applied to this concept in Pali vijnana in a way that doesn't always work. It sometimes creates confusion because of our other ways of using consciousness. But vijnana itself is not necessarily too different from the English word, but it already there's a different understanding of it. Yeah, in the Buddhist teachings. So vijnana can be broken down. We have vi, which is this prefix, which means separate or distinct. Nya, which means knowledge, and jnana means insight. Distinct knowledge or distinct knowing of something. And this is to say a moment of, maybe a better word is cognition. Everyone said that when we look at vijnana as cognition, then we kind of more understand what it is and what its function is, especially in the five aggregates. When you take things like feeling, perception, and mental formations, and you set them aside from consciousness, then consciousness looks kind of bare. It's like a tree without leaves. It's simple and thin, and there isn't much to it. But when you look at it into dependent origination, and you say, well, perception and feeling and mental formations and craving and greed, hatred, and delusion, all of these things need consciousness to exist. Well, yeah, it is. Consciousness is just a tree, but at the same time, everything is dependent on it. Yeah. How could this possibly work? And how do we get beyond it? Because as a Buddhist teaching, consciousness is not self. Consciousness is a Dhamma that can be seen to arise and cease. Now, that's not something we particularly get to see. again, because we're cognizing this moment. We're cognizing the sound of my voice. We're cognizing the sights in the room. We're cognizing the feeling of the chair that we're sitting against. We're cognizing these things, and when we think about them, we're cognizing those thoughts. Yeah, so it seems like everything we're doing is tied in with consciousness in a way that's it's impossible to kind of separate it. But that's what we're gonna try to open our minds a bit to this concept, and that's really what I hope you see. All of this talk about consciousness is for. It's not meant to confuse you. It's not meant to invalidate the things that you're experiencing. We talk about it, and we talk about it being impermanent and suffering and not self as a way of kind of relaxing around it. The purpose of relaxing around consciousness is to be able to see that it is something that arises and ceases, that it is something that is impersonal, that it is something that is, it's part of reality. And as we relax around it, we are relaxing around our very suffering. Yeah, because a lot of our suffering comes with our inability to think beyond cognition, beyond moment-to-moment awareness, our inability to think outside of ourselves, and to think that we are our experience. Well, this is a limiting idea. And this is what consciousness does to us when we get fixated on it as something that has to be there. We are limiting ourselves to just what we see, smell, taste, hear. I skipped hearing. Yeah. See, hear, smell, taste, and touch. Yeah. Well, why would we want to just limit ourselves to that when it's possible that reality is something greater? But how do we work with that? How do we release our tension around consciousness? And there's actually I think maybe you've heard this sort of koan, and it's like, if a tree falls in the woods, does it make a sound? Kind of rolled your eyes, and yes, we've heard that, and it's a sort of philosophical, it's like a koan, or it's meant to just break your brain, basically, right? If a tree falls in the woods and nobody is there to hear it, does it make a sound? Well, this is something that, if something like quantum physics like approaches it, it'll say like, well, we don't know. And there's a lot of question marks that come up with this particular scenario. Yeah. Well, so it, does the tree exist if there's nobody there, or does it only exist because somebody is there to see it? And even quantum physics will say, well, there's a probability. There's energy, but not necessarily becoming matter. There's a chance that there's a tree falling in, 98 out of 100 scenarios. The tree falls and makes a sound, but if there's nobody there to know it, then it hasn't really come into being. And this is the sort of thing we want to be like, rather than get an answer about it, we're interested in the question, because the question and the reason it's used as a koan, as a sort of riddle to unravel our tension, is because it points at our wanting to have an answer. Yeah. And here's the thing, is does the tree, or does the sound, or does any of this depend on an observer? Can it exist without a consciousness there to observe it? And this is where we're like, well, is that possible? And if we say, well, no, consciousness is everything. The world is mind-made, right? So like, there, if nobody's there, it didn't really happen. But rather than getting a strong answer about it, the question is more interesting to us. Are there things that happen in our life that we're not aware of, and yet we're kind of sure that they happened? Yeah. It's like, you don't necessarily have any idea what's going on outside the walls of your house right now. And yet, when you hear a knock at the door, did the person on the other side of the door just materialize because you were there to hear it? Or did they probably have to leave their house and drive over and walk up to the door and knock on the There's nobody at your door, Laura. They have to, were they, did they still exist even though you weren't aware of them? And this is where we want to kind of start moving. It's like, oh, there could be things that are happening outside of consciousness. Yeah. Oh, okay. And the Buddha is saying, yes, there is things happening outside of consciousness. And if we look at our own reality, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. We're not thinking about anything. We're not thinking about books. I'm looking at your bookshelf, Ryan. We're not thinking about books. And then we see books, and suddenly we're thinking, like, oh, there's that one book I want to read. Yeah. Now, suddenly, on seeing the book, suddenly there's this idea about, oh, suddenly I have this real desire to get back to read that book. Where did that come from? One second it was not there, and now it's there. So, but there is this underlying tendency. Did the underlying tendency exist even though we weren't consciously aware of it? We would say yes. But if we're not conscious of it, did it exist? Oh, hopefully we're breaking our brain here. We want this sort of flexibility, yeah, that things can happen, things can be real, things can be emotion, even if we're not aware of them, that consciousness is not everything, that consciousness is really just a moment of recognition that serves a particular function. And the function it serves is being the tree, the sort of core or base of a more fleshed out experience. Consciousness, we need to cognize the object in order to feel, in order to perceive or make sense of, in order to have a relationship to. In essence, cognition helps us be us. Without cognition, there are dhammas, there are things happening, there are patterns, there is motion, there is activity, there's a story, but we are not in it. Yeah, so in a way, it's very fitting that you have the ignorance, the idea of self as the condition for consciousness to arise. And in the weird feedback loop that is dependent origination, because consciousness arises, we think that we exist. Yeah, we think that, oh, because I have a location here and I am perceiving the world through this perspective, that must mean I am here. I am real. I am a thing because I think, therefore, I am. Hopefully, this becomes a question to us rather than an answer. Yeah, I am because I think. That's the way we should more approach it, because is thinking everything? And when we can start to loosen up around this idea, we see consciousness as something that is arising and ceasing. We get a little bit of context for all of the fluid, trippy weirdness that might be happening in our meditation, that might be happening in our dreams, that might be happening whenever something happens in the world, and we're like, what's going on? What do I make of this? Is this the Four Noble Truths something happening? Is this past karma? I don't get this. It can be as simple as I'm not consciously aware of what's going on, but there are things going on. Yeah. And in some ways, it's a lot like a lot of ideas that we have. We see are rooted in an idea of self. They're rooted in an idea of perspective, and they don't exist until that perspective arises. And once that perspective ceases, they also cease to exist. A good example is ownership. So a trusty pen, it's a new pen, a trusty pen. Does this pen have ownership? Yeah. And you say, well, it's your pen, right? And I would say, yes, it's my pen. But this is just a conventional truth. In reality, if we chopped up the pen and looked at every single atom of it, we wouldn't find a single atom that was stamped with my name to identify it as clearly my pen. What we would find is just pen. From top to bottom, nothing but just pen. Looking at that and understanding that, we'd start to realize that possession requires consciousness. It requires a perspective, right? that there is no owner of the pen. The pen doesn't carry an owner with it. And yet, if you were to sneak into my kuti in the middle of the night and snatch the pen and sneak off and put it in your lapel if you have one of them and you look forward to writing with it, you would accumulate bad karma. Right? The pen, it does not at its fundamental level have an owner, and yet it would be bad to steal it at the same time. Why? Well, because in that instance, well, you are conscious, you are existing, and so it's not necessarily any particular part of you that would be responsible, but all of it's kind of going along for the ride, yeah, because you did this thing intentionally. Well, your consciousness is going to arise in a place where you get the consequences of that action because consciousness. Now, were there not consciousness, were there not a perspective, there would be nobody to receive the consequences of that action. If that line of consciousness from you sneaking in and grabbing the pen and retreating into the darkness of the night with my pen, if that line of consciousness suddenly abruptly ceased and did not continue, if there was no follow-on from that, there would be no consequence. Because it's the line of consciousness, it's the line of a being that is doing the kama. Yeah. An example of where we see this is there's this idea of plants, right? And a lot of people are like, are plants alive or are they not alive? And in the Buddhist time, they called plants single faculty life. And this means there is consciousness, but there is not perception, feeling, greed, hatred, delusion, any of that. Yeah, there is consciousness. They grow towards the light. There's a sense that they're alive when they have water and nutriment, and when they don't have that, they die, and then they kind of crumble into dust, right? There's a sense that something is doing something, and yet at the same time, they don't make any comment. Yeah. You go and you pick a fruit from the tree, you don't accumulate any bad karma. Why? Because you're not stealing from the tree. If the tree is in any way conscious of that, that is the limit of it. It's aware that, the fruit's not there anymore. Yeah. And so a lot of this idea of consciousness, we can see it can be a very basic thing. Yeah, but it can also be the very complicated thing that is our lives. It works both ways. And some ways we might think of this is in the consciousness element is synonymous with what we call the light casino. And so when we play with this idea of consciousness, we're also playing with the idea of what it means to cognize something. And in order to become aware of something, you need to have a medium, right? In order to see something, you need to have light. In order to hear something, you need to have the vibration. Yeah. In order to smell something, there needs to be air to carry the odor. Yeah. This is in our physical life, but in terms of consciousness, in order to cognize something, there needs to be light, there needs to be awareness. Yeah, there needs to be oh, that something is there, a Dhamma is there, an object is there. And so developing this consciousness casino or this light casino is to develop the breaking down all of the barriers we have to cognizing things, basically increasing our sense of light or our sort of the ability of the mind to make contact with things and know that something is there. And this has a lot of interesting applications. It expands our mind in the same way when we practice meditation, we find that we start to become aware of things and we start to be able to work things out, but we don't know how. Just things start falling into place. They start making a little bit more sense, and we realize we're the consciousness is working behind the scenes. We're coming in contact with ideas that we couldn't come in contact with before. Why? Well, because we have barriers up, because we were limited in our ideas. When we loosened up around consciousness, we found that our consciousness could arise in new places and in new ways. Yeah, and in the same way, this is simply our ability to be aware, to recognize, to come in contact with dhammas, and which is the basis for us to understand them. But finally, we have an idea like the cessation of consciousness. And this is where, if we've worked enough to loosen our idea of consciousness, then the idea that consciousness can stop and not start up again is not as scary. Again, if we take something like the pen and we say, well, when I am here to perceive it, to feel about it, to have consciousness about it, it has an owner. But when I am not here, the pen is still there in terms of like there's a probability, there's an energy of pen waiting for somebody to come along and need to write something, whether or not somebody's aware that it's there. There's something there. But at the same time, like when we're not conscious of it, you know, it is still there. Yeah. And that means that we don't need to be aware of something in order for something to exist. There doesn't need to be consciousness. And so the Buddha talks about the Nibbana element as that which doesn't arise and doesn't cease, that which is unailing, unfettered, unconstructed. It has no beginning and has no end. There's a funny thing about consciousness is it can actually create the impression that there's a beginning before it began. Say you wake up in the morning and your first thought is, oh, okay, I've got to get up and have breakfast. Yeah. You can, if you were to ask a few minutes later, like, was that the beginning? You wouldn't be able to discern a beginning from when you became conscious. It would feel like you were there before you woke up, right? Yeah, of course it would. Of course I was there. I'd say it didn't, if it was it, it the existence didn't begin because I woke up. In the same way, the person doesn't appear just because they knocked at your door. But at the same time, you were not conscious. So although the things that you would associate with you weren't there in the preceding moments. And so the Buddha looks at samsara and he says, this is without a discernible beginning. Why? Because from the perspective of consciousness, it is possible for us to feel like there's a beginning before consciousness arose. Like we arise and we already have a story, yeah, of what happened before. And so there's this funny thing is that you can have story, you can have backstory basically before consciousness arises. And after consciousness ceases, things can still go on. And then when, you know, if consciousness arises again, you could say, oh, well, all of this still happened. So basically, things can still happen outside of consciousness. And, but they won't have an owner. They won't have any feeling. They won't have any perception. Yeah. Some ways we're very attached to this notion that we are here and this is my experience and this is my story and this is what's happening, because it makes sense to us to have a perspective. Whereas if we didn't have a perspective, if we didn't have a location, it would just be a story. Yeah. But if we look at the difference between the consciousness that arises in a dream versus the consciousness that arises when we're awake, we see that they're really kind of the same. What's different is that sense of solidity and agency and continuity. Yeah. But we find the exact same thing happens. When consciousness arises, we tend to be very good at just running with it. Yeah. So some people can get really spun out around the idea of rebirth in Buddhism, but if you understand consciousness, it makes total sense. If you were to suddenly wake up and you were in the body of a dog, you would be like, I got to go chase a squirrel. Why? Well, because it would make sense. You're waking up and you're suddenly cognizing your surrounding, you're cognizing your form, you're cognizing your feelings, you're cognizing your memories, which are basically a lot of chasing your tail and falling asleep and not much else. And so you get the program and you run with it. And this is what we do in our dreams. 1 minute we're here and we're just running with it. We don't ask why, we don't ask how, we don't ask like, how did I get here? We never ask that. It's bizarre. We just run with it. And then suddenly we're flying and we just run with it. And suddenly we're having lunch at a cafe with friends that we haven't seen in a dozen years. And we just run with it. Whereas when we're awake, we tend to be much more rigid. We say, okay, how did I get here? Oh yeah, that's right. I came from the kitchen. It's like, well, I blanked out there for a minute, but now, okay, now here I am. This is what I'm doing. This is what I'm doing next. Yeah. But really at the level of consciousness, it's no different. And if we were to loosen up, we would get to a state where wherever our consciousness arise, we kind of just run with it. Yeah. And this is like that joke. I've said like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the wisest man in the world. You know, it's this skit in a sci-fi book. And the wisest man in the world is always in the present moment. And at 1 minute he's like making an inventory of all of the stuff he has, and something interrupts him. And he's like, oh wow. And he goes and he tends to it. And then he's like, where am I? What am I doing? But he's so in the present moment, he looks down and he sees the pen and paper and he's like, oh, I must be taking an inventory. And so he starts taking an inventory. Yeah. And it's in some ways, this is what it is to be wise, is to just be in the present moment and not get attached to what came before, what comes after, but to just look at consciousness as, well, this is what's arising. Yeah, this is the present moment. This is the existence I'm in. And not having to answer the question of what came before and what came after, because that might be beyond the bounds of what we can be aware of. But again, this plays into flexibility around all kinds of things like views and conditionality and rebirth and a lot of things that we were like, oh, I'd really like a concrete answer. But if we can get relaxed enough to kind of be like, well, wow, there can be things outside of what I'm aware of, and things will still work. Well, then it's like, okay, maybe I won't get a concrete answer about this, but something's going to happen. And maybe I do wake up tomorrow in a dog's body. But you know what? The important thing is that I don't suffer about it, that I can just kind of work with it and keep going with whatever and figure it out. And so it goes from being a scary experience to one that we can just process. Like that's all we ever do. And the real important matter is when the transition happens, when the change happens, or when something arises or something ceases, do I suffer? And we can say no. Well, then that's fine. And this is what we find in the end, is that when we are just fine with consciousness ceasing and not starting again, then we realize, yeah, things exist and there are stories and there are characters and it's all well and good. And I don't have to be one of them. I don't have to be in the middle of it. I don't have to have this core of a person who is inevitably going to suffer. Yeah. You can just let things be what they're going to be. And that's when consciousness is no longer necessary, no longer appropriate. And this thing, which is like, there couldn't possibly be anything beyond it, is just like, oh yeah, it's that thing that happens when I'm awake. But it's not everything. So with that, I leave you, and hopefully it opens your mind a little to continue exploring. Remember, whatever you experience in your meditation, that is something you are experiencing in your meditation. I don't say it's important. I don't say it's the end all be all. I don't say take it as an answer, but it does happen. Yeah. And this is allows us to keep exploring, keep looking, keep being interested. When there's curiosity, there is light. And when there is light, we're likely to continue to learn and grow. And funny enough, okay, they moved the button to stop recording. I think I got.